Your SteveJonesShow.com audio is coming up next. Audio and podcast of The Steve Jones Show, a service of Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is The Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Good Wednesday afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the Steve Jones Show here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. It's great to have you with us. We roll through this Wednesday afternoon getting ready for what should be a very interesting and important showdown as Penn State takes on Northwestern Saturday at Beaver Stadium. Northwestern at 5-0 in the season after their 700-yard-plus performance against Indiana Saturday in the Big Ten opener that they won 44-29. We know the Nittany Lions are hot. They've won three consecutive games. Should be quite a matchup between the two Saturday at Beaver Stadium with a high noon showdown. Today we'll preview the game, take a long look at the game with our friends from StateCollege.com. We'll bring in two reporters here to the Sunbury Motors studio to talk about Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and also we'll have the phone line open today to get your thoughts on all this and much more at 1-800-795-9565. That's 1-800-795-9565 on the Lenape Solar Hotline at lenapesolar.com. Also, baseball wrapping up. Miguel Cabrera on the verge of winning the Triple Crown, the first since Carl Yastrzemski in 1967, 45 years ago. Oh, by the way, when's the last time it happened in the National League? How about 1937? Joe Medwick, 75 years ago. That's how difficult it is to win baseball's Triple Crown. And Miguel Cabrera, an unbelievable season. He's made all the MVP voting easy. And you know what? At 87 wins, the Tigers will probably have the fewest wins of any team in the playoffs. Yet you know what? They might be with Justin Verlander, Prince Fielder, Miguel Cabrera, Shearer, Pfister, the other pitchers they have. They might be in a short series the most dangerous team. We'll talk about that and much more. But first, above the noise, here's Dan Patrick.
I'm sure you've browsed the web from time to time looking for a new or used vehicle and came across a few user-unfriendly websites. Kind of wasteful, right? It's time you could have been spending browsing the inventory and services you will always find at sunburymotors.com. Kia, Hyundai, Ford, Lincoln, new and quality used. There's a great selection and the best prices around. Their Black Book service takes the guesswork out of trading your car, and you can find out how much your car is worth with one click of the mouse. If you're looking for a commercial vehicle, Sunbury Motor Company has them. And you can browse online and take your time learning about Sunbury Motor Company's tire rewards, service department, parts, body shop, and much more. It's user-friendly and then some when you visit sunburymotors.com to see all their new and used inventory. Be sure to visit the North 4th Street Auto Plaza in Sunbury or Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf.
Business owners, listen up. Reducing your electric bill goes hand in hand with increasing your energy efficiency. And now you can accomplish both with a hand from Lenape Solar, your approved PP&L e-Power Trade ally. Upgrading to energy efficient lighting in your facility has never been simpler or more affordable. And we do all of the paperwork for you. The e-Power Direct Discount Program for PP&L customers pays you up front for up to 75% of the project cost. And with the savings you'll clearly see, your project can easily pay for itself in less than a year. Lenape Solar is your trusted local source for energy efficiency and solar energy solutions. And now is the time to lower your business's electric bill and increase your bottom line forever. With a hand from Lenape Solar, this is Justin Charles, and I invite you to schedule your free, no-obligation energy analysis today by calling 570-286-1496, visiting Lenape Solar at 140 South 2nd Street in Sunbury, or find us online at lenapesolar.com.
Welcome back. Great to have you with us on this Wednesday afternoon. We'll hear from Nate Mink and Ben Jones, StateCollege.com. Get their commentary on The Penn State Northwestern game Saturday at Beaver Stadium. Great to have Kevin Herr on board, as always. And another opportunity here over the next couple of hours to ruin the memories of his childhood. Feel like we've ruined almost everything for you.
I still want to see where that track is in Ontario.
It's in Ontario, California.
Well, where is Ontario, California, though?
It's in Southern California.
That's like saying Mexico is south of Texas. I mean, can you be a little more specific?
Well, it's closer to Los Angeles. How about that?
Okay, but it's a defunct racetrack now, correct?
I think so.
Oh, you don't know? But you knew it was part of the Triple Crown, but now you don't know.
Well, look, you know, how many trips have I made to Ontario, California?
I can't say that there'd be too many.
Of course not. Let's give Miguel Cabrera a lot of credit here, pulling a Ted Williams down the stretch. And not a Jose Reyes. Now, Reyes, of course, pulled himself out after he knew he had the batting title wrapped up last year with the Mets. Ted Williams went into the final game, the final doubleheader of the season in 1941 against the Philadelphia A's with a batting average of .399/6, which rounded to .400. He was asked to sit down by the Red Sox, and he said absolutely not, and then went 6-for-8. In the doubleheader to finish at 4-0-6. Miguel Cabrera could have sat today feeling fat and happy with winning the Triple Crown. And no, he is in the lineup again. He was in the lineup last night too. The Tigers have clinched. They're in. No need for him to play. He insisted on playing. That is a pro's pro. I also think they're going to be a very dangerous team in the playoffs. So, I want to give them a lot of credit for that. The Pirates are finishing up this afternoon against the Atlanta Braves. And it's also the final regular season game for Chipper Jones. And the Pirates, once again, did not break .500 for the 20th consecutive season. 20 straight seasons of losing baseball in Pittsburgh after being one of the premier franchises in all of baseball. The Braves lead it 4-0. That game is in the bottom half of the ninth inning. Washington, on a day where the Theodore Roosevelt mascot finally won the president's race for the first time ever, leads Philadelphia 3-1, the bottom of the seventh. And the Cubs and Houston at the end of 2 in a titanic struggle, 1-1. Santonio Holmes is out for the rest of the year. NBA adopting new anti-flopping rules.
Didn't the Jets go out and get a wide receiver today?
I'm sure they did, but it's not going to be Santonio Holmes.
And that was exactly the point I was going to make. And does anybody know who his name? What his name is?
Jason Hill.
There you go. Yeah, that again proves my point. Does anybody really know who it is?
Well, that's why I have to give Sanchez a pass. He doesn't have a lot of weapons around him, and his best receiver was Santonio Holmes. Yu Darvish will start for the Rangers in the playoffs. So that's big. And then there's this one on that last play of the game between the Seahawks and the Packers. A man from Canada on a $5 wager won $725,274.
It was later found out that he was a cousin of the replacement referee.
Well, he went 15 for 15 on his betting ledger, on his ticket. That swung it for him. How about that? $725,000.
That would be called a life-changing bet.
Right. And Josh Hamilton will be in the lineup tonight for Texas when they take on Oakland. Josh Hamilton's the one guy that can ruin the Triple Crown run of Miguel Cabrera. But Cabrera will be in the lineup. He has not fully played last night. I think he had two more hits last night. And we were debating a little bit at football practice last night about between Steve Trout and Miguel Cabrera. I looked at everybody and said, look, I said, the Triple Crown hasn't been won in 45 years. I said, and Detroit's in the playoffs, and the Angels are not. They all looked at me and said, well, that argument's over. See, I ruin a lot of moments. You're sitting there rolling your eyes.
I'm sitting here thinking now everybody else feels my pain.
Well, I mean, look, it hasn't been won in 45 years. They're in the playoffs. Who else are you going to vote for? Make Steve Trout Rookie of the Year. Big 12's coordinator of officials apologizing profusely to Oklahoma State coach Mike Gundy for the officials' botched call at the end of the 41-36 loss to Texas. Walt Anderson told Gundy that head linesman Brad Edwards signaled touchdown too soon without a proper view of the ball in the play that put the Longhorns ahead, according to the report. Texas running back Joe Bergeron fumbled, and the question was whether it happened before he crossed the goal line. Edwards was on the Texas side of the goal line, sprinted into the pile to signal that Bergeron had scored. Replay officials reviewed the play and confirmed the call, despite Oklahoma State safety Detoian Lowe reaching into the pile and recovering the fumble. Big 12 source told the paper that the replay decision was correct. However, there wasn't enough evidence to overturn the play. As Edwards signaled for a touchdown, Lowe argued with umpire Scott Tiefer while holding the football. It's usually a bad sign. An officiating source told the paper that once the ball got lost in the pile, clear recovery goes away. To earn possession, Oklahoma State would have had to demonstrate a clear recovery. On the fact that he's holding the ball and handing it to the official, I can see what the problem is. The loss dropped Oklahoma State to 2-2, Texas 4-0. Horns, of course, get West Virginia this week.
By the way, what's the over in that game? After West Virginia's game last week, debut in the Big 12, I want the over.
You have to figure it's 100.
I so want the over after last week's debut in the Big 12.
I mean, you have to figure it's 100.
Do you know that Geno had eight touchdowns and six incompletions? He had more touchdowns than incompletions in that game.
Well, he has 20 touchdown passes this year, and he has not thrown an interception.
I mean, if that doesn't solidify you as a Heisman candidate, nothing will.
Well, he's a Heisman candidate. There's no doubt. I mean, I think he's been a Heisman candidate all year, especially since the Orange Bowl last year. So he's been a Heisman candidate. You know, Matt Barkley is still, to me, a Heisman candidate. He still has other opportunities down the road. He still has Notre Dame, for example, to play. And Notre Dame's defense, with a strong performance by Matt Barkley, is a worthy opponent that can increase your Heisman stock if you play well. Braxton Miller is probably a Heisman candidate. There are no running backs right now that are Heisman candidates. I think it really comes down to the quarterbacks across the country. So, I mean, those are some of the names right away. And somebody in my class the other day mentioned to me, who says, well, he won the Heisman Trophy with that. And I looked over and said, it's September. Nobody wins the Heisman Trophy in September. I said, Baylor gave up 42 points to Louisiana Monroe. I mean, not exactly a ringing endorsement for the guys from Waco. Now, you start doing that against Oklahoma, Texas, now you start to get a different feel for how good you are as a player. Yeah, I know Texas gave up 36 to Oklahoma State, but they're a better defensive team than Baylor. And, of course, Oklahoma should be a better defensive team than either one of them. If you start doing stuff like that, especially on the road, it makes a difference. But he has certainly put himself in a prime position where now what he does will be closely examined every single week. He is in the conversation and is in the argument. So that's where he is. And a brilliant performance indeed. News at the bottom of the hour with Sarah. Then Nate Mink and Ben Jones from SteakHolics.com join me here in the Sunbury Motors studio. Don't forget about Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Then in the final hour, more ways to ruin Kevin's childhood.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us. As once again, we have ruined Kevin's childhood with several what he thought were great memories, and then when the truth came out, the memories were cooked and fried. He's also upset that I told him there was a triple crown of racing in the 70s. And he doesn't like when I bring up something about open wheel racing and it's not something he remembers.
I don't think that's something anybody remembers. That's the scary part.
Sarah, welcome to the show. It's great to have you here.
It's great to be here, Steve.
Now, I want to get, first of all, last Thursday night, the Ravens played. You went to the game. What was the experience like at M&T Bank Stadium?
It was awesome. We had a great time and standing O for the refs. So, yay for that.
Yeah, my man Gene Steratore. I've known Gene for a long time. I'm happy for Gene to see him back. He's actually one of the better referees. I don't know if I give Gene a standing ovation, but still, I like Gene. So did you give them a standing ovation?
I did. I was part of the standing O.
There you go. Kevin, would you have?
I actually did, via television watching, give them a standing O.
Actually, I want to tell you what, it was a great piece of officiating I saw. And that was over the weekend on the 99-yard interception by Michael Mauti. You have to remember that in a 99-yard scramble situation like that, first of all, Penn State had great hustle getting guys in position to make blocks, which was tremendous. But to the credit of the officials on the play, you have to remember that, first of all, they're running 80 to 90 yards as well to put themselves in a position to make a call. And even though it looked like Mauti fell into the end zone, and I called it a Penn State touchdown because he went into the end zone, that the official on the field ruled him down at the one-yard line. So naturally, of course, they go to replay, and replay confirmed the call. Now, to run all that way and make that kind of call is a great piece of officiating. And they should get credit for something like that. And the Big Ten officials, I mean, it's Bill Carollo's crew deserve a lot of credit for being in the right position on a long play to make that kind of call. So just a little slice of officiating there. Ontario Motor Speedway. All right, Kevin?
By the way, the Ontario Motor Speedway has been discussed on this program more than in its entire existence radio program.
You want to know where it is, okay? All right? The Ontario Motor Speedway is located 40 miles east of Los Angeles. It was the first and only racing facility built to accommodate major races sanctioned by all four dominant racing bodies, IndyCar Series, USAC, NASCAR for a 500-mile oval stock car race, and NHRA drag racing. Okay, they also had a road course. The track opened in August 1970. Was considered state-of-the-art at the time. First full year of racing included Indy-style open-wheel inaugural California 500 in 1970. Also had the Miller High Life 500 stock car race, Super National drag racing. All that took place, okay? Each of the inaugural events drew attendance second only to their established counterparts, the Indianapolis 500 and the Daytona 500. That's how popular it was at the time. The track was then purchased by a real estate development company by Chevron Land Company. It was demolished in 1980 at a cost of $3 million. It's estimated that the 800-acre facility with 155,000 permanent seats and an air-conditioned private stadium club would have been a replacement cost of $350 million by today's money. And it was part of the 500-mile series with Pocono, Indy, and Ontario. Winners of the race, these are your guys, okay? Jimmy McElreath, Joey Leonard, Roger McCluskey, Wally Dallenbach Sr., Bobby Unser, A.J. Foyt, Bobby Unser again, and Al Unser twice. Then when they went to kart, it was Bobby Unser twice. When they had Formula One, it was Mario Andretti.
See, I knew all those names after Wally Dallenbach Sr., who, by the way, whose son, Wally Dallenbach Jr., had done a lot of years in NASCAR, is a really good commentator on NBC Sports Network.
He is.
Really good on the IndyCar.
Roger McCluskey actually won the USAC Series 1 year, just so you know, okay? Joe Leonard, along with Parnelli Jones in 1967 at the Indianapolis 500, were raced with Pratt & Whitney jet engines. It was the first time that Pratt & Whitney technology had been used in an engine at Indianapolis. Leonard and Parnelli Jones both used it, both raced near the front, both eventually did not finish, especially at the end. I think Jones DNF'd with 10 laps to go, and after an accident, A.J. Foyt won. So that's Joe Leonard.
Didn't Parnelli have that? Didn't he debut that at Indianapolis?
That's what I said.
Yeah, okay. I didn't hear you say that. I'm sorry.
I said Joe Leonard and Parnelli Jones both did it together.
Okay, sorry about that. I didn't hear that part. But yeah, I remembered he did that in Indianapolis for sure.
You are now officially freaked out.
Well, listen, you talk about different chassis and engines and so forth. That's what's going to make this coming Indianapolis 500 very interesting, because it's going back to the way it used to be, where you have, you know, last year we had all different engines finally. Now there's all different engines. Then you're going to see some new chassis come in. That's where it's really going to be interesting in how teams get ready for the 500 this year.
So that's our open wheel for the day.
I feel fulfilled now.
The Pirates season has mercifully come to a close, 79-83 officially. Lost today to Atlanta 4-0 in a game that was played at PNC Park. Final regular season game, by the way, for Chipper Jones. They out-hit the Pirates 10-4 today. A.J. Burnett finishes 16-10. Let's see, what did Chipper do today? Chipper pinch hit and did get a hit. Finishes at 287. That's quite a way to finish your swan song season. Now they get ready for the one-game playoff. Burnett went 5 2/3, 8 hits, 4 runs, all earned. But see, that is, in a nutshell, the Pirates' problem this year with their pitching. They don't go deep enough into games. Too much put on the bullpen. Then Sheets. Now, they pitched 9 pitchers today. The Braves pitched 9 pitchers, 1 inning each. played a lot of people. Pirates finish up at 79-83. Couldn't even win 80 games this year, despite the start they had.
Why is it in Pittsburgh that everybody's okay with that? You never hear an uproar from Pirate fans like, this is ridiculous. We don't have a team. They're like, ah, that's okay. We did better than last year, at least.
Why?
Yeah.
Two reasons. There are a couple reasons why. Number one, it's a Steeler town.
Steelers
own the town. Steelers absolutely own the town. If the Steelers are 7-9, there's an uproar.
Yes.
If the Penguins don't make the playoffs, there's an uproar.
True.
The Pirates are meeting expectations.
However mediocre that might be.
Right. That was not meant to be a joke.
No,
I mean, in other words, if they finished over 500, people would be delighted. I mean, all right, lifelong Red Sox fan here. This season stunk.
69-92 going in.
Right. Just, I mean, bad baseball, poorly managed, and the personnel. It's just not good enough.
Speaking of Boston, how long before they officially start looking for a new manager?
I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do.
12 hours?
I don't know what they're going to do. I don't know.
He's a wild card, that's for sure.
He says, for a very intelligent man, and he is an intelligent man, he doesn't say some things that are very smart. You can't throw your players under the one of the you can't throw your players under a bus. If you want to have a clubhouse, all right, or a locker room, okay, what you say within the confines of the clubhouse or what you say within the confines of the locker room needs to stay there. When you go up front in front of the media, you back your players. What he did with Youkilis was ignorant. You can't do that. Questioning how hard the guy plays. When the guy's played hard his entire career, his entire career is built on playing hard. But it's also the first time in his career he's had to overcome injuries. He lost the clubhouse the day he did that because everybody looked around and they said, wait a minute, this guy helped me get a ring. And he has a tendency to do that. You know, if you want to go out and you want to get to the line when it comes to talk umpire officiating, depending on the sport, if you want to get to the line on things like that where you're backing your players up, fine. But in public, you have to back your players unless it is something so egregious. That's what you have to do. Name one time where Joe Paterno singled out a player and put him down. Name one time Bill O'Brien has singled out a player, put him down. Pat Flaherty ever singled out a player, put him down. Pat Chambers, Joe Susan. Have you ever hear them do anything except say something about a player, even if the player's struggling, say, well, he's struggling just a bit or whatever, at least couch it a little bit? You don't do that. Those moments happen in meetings, okay, where you sit down and you go into a meeting and say, look, you're not doing this, this, this. I need you to do this to make us better. I need you to do that. I need your attitude to change. And then you go out and say, yeah, okay, Kevin and I talked about it. We're both on the same page. He's a fabulous player, you know, and he's just meant so much to the franchise and blah, blah, blah. That's what you have to do. I know it's a long season. People get mad at one another. But you have to back each other up. And it has to be like that no matter what. Okay? I mean, look at the small circle that we have here. Okay? If somebody asks me about Kevin, I'm going to tell him exactly all the great things Kevin does for the show. I'm going to tell him all the great things Sarah does for the show, no matter what. Because every day I've got to go out there with Sarah Bartlett and Kevin Herr, and we do a show. And that's how you have to do things. Now, it's easier for me because they do a great job. All right? It is easier for me than when I'm asked about the job they do. you know, we may kid around on the air all the time, but we're family. I mean, we're a team. And that's what he's lost sight of. And I know it's a 162-game schedule, but guess what? We do a 256-day schedule here.
Well, one thing's for sure, when you lose confidence of a play as a player in your manager, both maybe in confidentiality, as you said, in the locker room or as a manager itself, that's a real big problem.
Well, exactly.
And I'm not sure the respect level is there anymore.
Right, and that's exactly right. I mean, look at what we have. Okay, you know, the single people out. Roger Haddon runs Sunbury Broadcasting. Every time he wants to talk to us, he talks to us. All the time. And usually he tells us mostly, you know, this is good, this is good, this is good. Hey, why don't you guys think about this or this? That's how he talks to us. And then he goes out in public, whether it's sales or whatever, and he's telling everybody how much he loves the show. That's good management. Simple as that. And that's not what he's doing here. I mean, he gets out there in press conferences and gets so emotional and he throws people under the bus. You can't do that. You can't throw people under the bus just to make yourself look good. You can't do it. And I know you have to take on some personalities. Well, if there's some personalities you can't work with, then you talk it over. And see what you can come to. Now, whether he survives or not, I have no idea. But they're not a good baseball team, and they're a dramatically different. Because remember, up until Labor Day last year, the Red Sox had the best record in baseball last year. And then down the stretch, where they go 5-20, where everything fell apart. And I said from day one, the Terry Francona firing was stupid. Never would have fired him. Never. Okay, I've looked at the long history of the ball club. Last I checked, he won them 2 world championships. Okay, that's the guy you back up. Who, by the way, year after year after year after year after year, with a lot of difficult and different personalities, managed it. And not one time did Terry Francona throw a guy under the bus. Never. One of the great managerial situations in baseball between two rivals was the managerial style of Terry Francona and the managerial style of Joe Torre. Both should be universally praised for how they handled stars and how they got the most out of them. And between the two of them, they won 7 championships. Pretty good.
By the way, the Phillies season has not mercifully come to an end yet. They're now down 5-1, bottom of the 8th, to Washington.
It's just been one of those years. I mean, I would not give up on what the Phillies are doing. We saw they played down the stretch. Let's see next year how they play with a full season with their guys.
Well, they have some nice young talent. That Darren Ruff seems to be a solid ball player, mm-hmm. at least in the minors. I don't know how he fits into the organization right now.
You know, I mean, I look at this team, okay? You know, and Chase Utley started, he went 0 for 4. Utley hit .256 on the year, okay? Carlos Ruiz, you need a new contract. .325. Dominic Brown, .237, still not quite getting his legs.
But what about what about Ruff? I mean, what do you think of him? A young guy, 26. You know, he's hit a lot of solid baseballs in the minors, but I don't know how that transfers to the big leagues.
You don't know.
Problem is, he's a first baseman and a left fielder.
Well, you'll be playing left field then.
Well, that was what I was going to say. He's probably going to have his hope in left field, but let's face it, Ryan Howard has not torn up pitching on both sides, left and right.
Yeah, but please discount Ryan Howard's season. You have to remember, you need to push off when you hit. he came back, and I think he did the best he could, considering, because again, he's a big man and physically, okay. Ruff did well. I mean, he hit what, three home runs? Didn't he hit three home runs?
He hit three games? With nine RBIs. He's played in 11 games, hitting, let's see, 355 with a walk, nine RBIs, three homers, good, two doubles, and a triple.
But he's going to have to play outfield. And you can then take him and play him at first base on those days that you need to give Ryan Howard a day off. And he'll need some time off.
Does he become like a full-time utility player? You know, he's a full-timer in left. Yeah, full-timer in left field, and then when Howard needs a day off, goes to first base.
Sure. Where he ends up playing 140 games. Also remember next year, you know, I'll be interested to see what they do with Freddie Galvis. I know he had to miss the 50 games. But when he played pretty well. Carlos Ruiz, fabulous. I can't say enough good things about Carlos Ruiz. Juan Pierre did pretty well for them this year. He ended up, he's hitting, what, 307?
Yeah, he turned out to be a big surprise.
Now, your disappointment is a guy like John Mayberry. Jimmy Rollins was a big disappointment this year.
Although I thought Mayberry started to come on late. And he's going to need,
you need him hitting 280, Kevin. Okay, you can't have him hitting 245. He played in 149 games this year. He had 14 home runs.
Now you can't say that he didn't get enough. Didn't get enough ABs.
Right now, Ryan Howard, I discount whatever numbers he put up. I still think he played wounded. He came back. I didn't think he'd play at all this year. When that injury first happened, I thought he was done. And I think he at least showed a lot of heart coming back out there and playing. I know he only hit 219. But he still played 71 games and hit 14 home runs. I would not sell Ryan Howard short based on him playing at less than 100%, trying to gut it out over the final 2.5 months of the season. Now, next year should be the year where you'd like to see Ryan Howard at 275 again and hit 30 to 35 home runs. That's what he's going to need to do for them. Jimmy Rollins has to somehow get that average up over 280. You can't have a 250 Jimmy Rollins playing for you. You can't. He's got to be a more productive player than that.
And Franson didn't look that bad this year. He played in like 50-some games and hit 330.
You know, and I wouldn't give up on this pitching staff. I would not give up on Halliday, Lee, Hamels, and Papelbon out of the bullpen. But I'd work like heck to find guys that can pitch the seventh and eighth innings. All right, top of the hour coming up. News with Sarah. And after the news, more talk here on at 1-800-795-9565 here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.